Well, I think we all know that we're in the season of politics. It's a horrible season, but we have elections that are coming up to elect a president. And of course, this is probably going to be the most contentious election ever. Of course, the last one was the most contentious ever, but now we've got another one coming up. The tone of discourse. What do y'all think about the tone of discourse? It's awful. It's awful on both sides. Words are flying. Words. Talk. Amongst all the pundits, the reporters just can't wait to get the next big story on who flubbed up. We've got the lie counters that have to watch every event and tell us how many times they lied that day. And lucky for them, they only did 30, but the other guy did 13. And it's all lies. It's kind of stunning on both sides. We're subjected to many things that we don't want to hear about, things we'd rather just not hear about at all. We know that civility, honesty, and truth are lying dead, bleeding on the floor. It's hard to find this civility in the conduct of all the politicians running for office, in a sense. But billions of words will be spoken by the pundits, by the reporters, by people chatting about it endlessly. Billions of words will be spoken. The question is, do words have meaning anymore? Do words have meaning? Do our words matter? Yeah, we hear about other people's words. We would like to condemn them, but do our words matter? In a world of alternative facts and false news and hacking and all the different things and AI, does what anybody says and how it's said make a difference? Now, I sure wished going through school and, you know, through college, I had access to those alternative facts. It's wonderful you can make up your own answers, call them facts, and yet they can be accepted readily. Alternative facts. Very handy, very handy. False news, well, you just pick whatever station you want to be on and try to figure out what their slant is, and you're going to find some false news. Today I want to talk about words. Words, the power of our words, and the title today is Our Words Matter. Our words matter. God actually has a lot to say about words and about our words. We're going to begin in James 3, verses 1 through 16. James 3, verses 1 through 16, where we find a discussion of the tongue and of words. In James 3, in verse 1, my brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. Well, that's a fair warning to the teachers, to the ministry, because we're held to a higher standard. We just can't get up here and lie about what the Bible says. We're held to a higher standard. So the words of the teacher, God is looking very carefully at. Verse 2, James 3, verse 2. For we all stumble in many things, and isn't that the truth? If anyone does not stumble in word, he's a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Now, when he says perfect there, we'd have to go to another translation. Ryrie Study Bible says this perfect means mature or full moral and spiritual growth. We're not going to be perfect, and our words are not always going to be perfect. Verse 3, indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Isn't it amazing? You can train a horse just lightly on the side of its neck, and it will turn. If people were quite so easy to turn, in many cases. Verse 4, look also at ships. All they are so large and are driven by fierce winds. They are turned by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. Now, being a somewhat professional pyromaniac myself, I've witnessed this firsthand. I hate to admit this, but when I was about 12 years old, I was in charge of burning the trash at our house out on Highway 80. We had a 23-acre farm, and I relished this job. Burning the trash was just glorious to me. So I go out to burn the trash, and, that field where the barrel was next to the greenhouse was just cut with fresh hay, and it dried, but it had not been baled yet. So I gather up a little pile of hay, and I light it on fire. I just love to see the flames leap up and go. And, yeah, they went. They burned the entire field to the ground, road to road to road to road. So a little fire can turn into a big fire. Very easily. Living in Colorado, very part-time, we're afraid of fires because once they get going in those mountains, it's almost impossible to put them out. How dangerous. A little fire can start a mammoth fire, and we've seen this in California and Oregon and Washington, where vast portions of the states burn down through a campfire, sometimes lightning, but oftentimes people do it. So how great a forest a little fire can kindle. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. That means that in the course of time, the whole world has seen this kind of iniquity. The tongue is also set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire by hell, by the grave, really by the influence of Satan. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptiles and creatures of the sea, is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. And that's true. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison, if misused. Now, I've been thinking about the tongue ever since, I decided on this subject, but I went to the dentist this week, and after my cleaning, Doc comes in and does a final examination. And he looked around. Great. You're doing great, Scott. I just love to go there. You're doing great, Scott. You know, everything looks good. Now let me see your tongue. I thought, really? What's a tongue got to do with this? Okay, he says, move your tongue left. And you, move your tongue right. Move your tongue up. Down. Okay, now stick your tongue out. He says, good. I don't know what that meant, but I'll take his word for it. Good. But this afternoon, I laid down for a few minutes on the couch to take a little nap, and I'm pondering the tongue and You know, it's a small thing, but and it's really your brain is the key to the tongue, your brain and your mind. So this little tongue, and I'm thinking about, I'm laying back, what is the position of my tongue? What should the position be? Now, this isn't real important. On the other hand, it may be real important. I'm laying there, I'm thinking, okay, what position, how do I want to position my tongue while I'm taking this nap? And I began to go to sleep, and I go to sleep and chomp. I bit my tongue because of all this. And I think my tongue revolted against this discussion in my mind. We'll never know about that. But I bit my tongue. I thought, well, I'm going to have to go to church and speak like that. It was kind of far back, and it relatively healed itself, thankfully. So don't overthink your tongue of positioning, you know. It's just, especially right now. But no man can tame the tongue. It's unruly evil, full of deadly poison, if misused. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse man. And isn't that the truth? The same mouth, the same brain that will celebrate God, and we'll praise and bless God, under the next moment can lash out and curse someone out. The same tongue. With it we bless God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. It's in the likeness of God. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessings and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. He's talking to the 12 tribes of Israel here. This isn't to an individual church. He's seeing these problems throughout the church, the New Testament church. And he says, this ought not be. This should not be. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? No. I'll recall in the early days of Big Sandy, we drilled wells because thousands of feast people were coming, and we had to have lots of water. Yes, there was a little spring behind the Redwood building, and the water was fantastic out of this spring. We had no idea. We were sitting on a gold mine. We just bottled that up. So everyone wanted to get to the spring. But unfortunately, running through all the pipes and the pine woods and the restrooms was this salt water. And it was awful. Does anybody but me remember this? I know Margaret certainly would. But you couldn't mix that good water in the spring and this nasty, salty mineral water. Fortunately, we found some good water, a few more drillings. But it just illustrates the point. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? No. Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh water. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts. This obviously was one of the main problems that he was addressing here. If you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. The truth is always the truth. We can't lie against the truth. It's so common to lie against the truth. That's what politics are all about these days. Whatever your political bent might be, and we're not involved in politics, but we have to watch it because you can't get away from it. But we need to evaluate it on the basis of real truth. This wisdom And he said, that's in parentheses, meaning, yeah, this is not wisdom. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic. You see, James really got worked up about this subject. He really did. And so that's why he wrote this. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil things are there. I think God is very concerned about our words and the power that those words have over others, for both good and bad. We're going to be using words every day of our life, unless you're mute, and then you'll be using hand signals and saying the same thing. Our words matter. And those words can be used for good or bad. James tells us that the tongue is extremely powerful despite its size. It's small, but your brain is big in directing it. We talk a lot. One estimate is that we speak enough words in a day to fill 50 pages in a book. And that in a year's time, we could fill 132 books and of 400 pages each. That's a lot of words. Now, some people exceed that greatly. That is a fact. And then some, mostly men, could be very quiet, and they might not fill a book in a year. Needless to say, amongst all those words, we say things that we shouldn't say. Just say things that we should not say. So the tongue is very necessary, but it's dangerous. Chris Rogers, a pastor from the Fundamentalist Church, says this. It only takes a spark, remember, to set off a forest fire. A careless or wrongly placed word out of your mouth can do that. By our speech, we can ruin the world, turn harmony into chaos, throw mud on a reputation, and send the whole world up in smoke, and go up in smoke with it. Smoke right from the pit of hell. Now, that's interesting. She nails it, mostly. She nails it. James tells us the absolute necessity of having control over one's tongue. You can't let your tongue get out of control. The tongue is described as a fire, and we know that fires, as a pyromaniac, fires go fast. You can, when I start the fire for our activities out here, I start with a little flame, and pretty soon we've got an 8-foot-high flame and 6 feet wide. And we don't let it get out of control. That's what we have to do with our tongue. Like fire, when it's controlled, it's good. It's very good. We all use fire. The tongue held in check is a power for great good. But out of control, it's going to cause havoc. An elderly man had a serious hearing problem for a number of years. His family tried again and again to convince him to go get a hearing aid. Finally, he relented and was fitted for a set of hearing aids, restoring his hearing to 100%. About a month later, he returned to the doctor to have his hearing tested again, and the doctor said with a smile, "Your hearing is perfect. I bet your family is really pleased that you can hear again." The gentleman replied, "Oh, I haven't told my family yet. I just sit around and listen, and I've changed my will 3 times. I'd like you to consider these words of power. This is from Pearls From Many Seas by J.T. Bach. A careless word may kindle strife. A cruel word may wreck a life. A bitter world may hate instill. A brutal word may smite and kill. A gracious word may smooth the way. A joyous word may light the day. A timely word may lessen stress. A loving word may heal and bless. Now, I don't know about you. I can only speak for myself, but my words get me in trouble fairly often. Fairly often. And I say things that I shouldn't say. And that's a problem because oftentimes you can't take those back. And the results of those words can last literally a lifetime. So if 90% of the time you have trouble, you know, controlling your words, you need really to take a look at that. We need to rethink our freedom of speech. We live in a country where we insist on freedom of speech. You can't tell me what to say. Of course, we can't tell you what to do. You can't tell me what to say or what not to say. I have my God-given rights. God-given rights to free speech. To lying speech? No. I've got my constitutional rights. Maybe that's true, but not everything that's constitutional is approved by God. We all want to be able to say anything about anyone, about anything with impunity. But that's not the way it works. In James 1 and verse 19, you could turn over to James 1. In verse 19, really it's a good idea to lead with your ears, not with your tongue. James 1 verse 19 says to be quick to listen and slow to speak. Now, many of us, including myself, are quick to speak and slow to listen, the direct opposite. So I think it's a, and my wife, you know, tells me this an enormous amount of times, maybe even weekly, you know, sometimes daily. Listen. Listen and don't butt in while you're listening. That's just me. I'm sure no one else has that problem at all. Be quick to listen and slow to speak. We have a tendency to react very quickly when somebody says something, and we answer quickly without a lot of thought. So it's often good to just chill, just for a moment, absorb what is being said, and very likely you will not say it, or you will not say it that way. I know, you know, sometimes we talkers, we just can't wait for the other party to quit talking so I can talk. Anyone else have that problem occasionally? Oh, I sure hope they get done with this story. I've got a better one. No, that's not godly, and it's not Christian. James 1, verse 26. Sometimes we need to bite our own tongue. Bite our tongue. We got to stop ourselves. You know that little button that when you have live radio and live TV, and someone says the wrong thing or utters some curse words or whatever might occur, you can hit that button and go back. We all need that button, right? Where we can punch a button and, oh, I didn't actually say that. Go back 7 seconds and start again. I wish we had a delay button on occasion. Yes, I sure do. Most of the time, our problem isn't that we don't say enough, but that we say way too much. James 1:26, bite your tongue, says that if you think you're religious but don't bridle your tongue, your religion is worthless. So it's not always good or right to speak your mind. Sometimes it's better to just bite your tongue. Now, I wasn't talking when I bit my tongue today, so I get off with that one. James 4, verse 11. James 4 and verse 11. We need to refuse to tear others down. James tells us not to speak evil against one another. Or in the Message translation, not to badmouth each other. It's very simple. Just to don't badmouth. Don't say anything at all if you don't have something good to say. Don't badmouth the other person. As we consider our words and the power they carry, I think it's good to apply the Rotary Pledge. If you think about the Rotary Pledge, and we won't call it the Rotary Pledge, we'll call it the Godly Christian Pledge at the moment. Here's the four-way test from the Rotary International. And this is what we should apply to what we say. Is it truth? Is it truth? The truth is hard to find. We have our Bibles, but there's so many things outside of the biblical realm that we have to make a judgment on whether it's true or not. Is it truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Three, will it bring goodwill and better friendship? Will our words bring better friendship and goodwill to all that we speak to? Four, will it be beneficial to all concerned? Will it be beneficial to all concerned? Let's talk just for a moment about gossip. Oh, you know, there's quite a bit in the Bible about gossip. And it begins in Psalm 101 and verse 5. And there's a number of scriptures we're going to wheel through very quickly. Psalm 101 and verse 5. Whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him will I destroy. That sounds pretty serious. The one who has a haughty look and a proud heart, him I will not endure. God will not countenance this kind of conduct. In Proverbs 10 and verse 18, whoever hides hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool. Have you done that? Have any of us done that? We have. Probably. I mean, if you're over 3 years old, probably. So we don't be a talebearer. Proverbs 18 in verse 8. The words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the inmost body. Oh, yeah. You can hear a very juicy story that you should not consider passing along to another person. We don't want to be talebearers. Proverbs 20 and verse 19. Proverbs 20 and verse 19. He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips. These are good common sense rules to live by. Proverbs 11 and verse 13. A talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is of a faithful spirit conceals a matter. You work with the person to help them, not to do them in by sharing that with someone else at their expense. Proverbs 26 and verse 20. Proverbs 26 and verse 20. Where there is no wood, the fire goes out. And where there is no talebearing, strife ceases. Very good. Don't add fire or wood to the burning fire. Where there's no talebearing, strife that you may have with someone will cease. It'll go away. Proverbs 16 and verse 28. Proverbs 16 and verse 28. A perverse man sows strife, and a whisperer separates the best of friends. You know how to lose a friend quickly? Talk about them with a different friend. It'll be the end of that relationship. Those kind of relationships that we share with our closest friends, and of course our wife and our kids, are not to be shared with others. Things that are negative, that would cast a very bad light on them. Psalms 15 and verse 1. This is a psalm of David. Verses 1 through 3. Psalm 15, verses 1 through 3. Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? And who may dwell in your holy hill? Who wants to be in the kingdom? That's what he's saying. Who may abide in your tabernacle? Who gets to go into the kingdom? Who may dwell in your holy hill? He who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. He who does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against his friend. That's what God wants in his kingdom, to be able to deal with the masses of people who will be coming up in the second resurrection. People of integrity, people who walk uprightly, who know God's law and keep it, who do works of righteousness. Righteousness, following the tenets of Jesus Christ, the Sermon on the Mount, and the sheep and the goats in Matthew 25. And speak the truth in our heart. In 1 Peter 4 and verse 15. 1 Peter 4 and verse 15. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, an evildoer, or as a busybody in other people's matters. Wow, that's a busybody is thrown in with murderers, thieves, evildoers. Being a busybody is you inserting yourself in other people's business that you have no right doing. There are three preachers who are out on a boat. They were far out in the water. They decide they're going to confess their shortcomings amongst them. One asked another, what is something that you have a problem with? They all agree to this. What is something you have a problem with? The first one says, well, I have a problem with alcohol. I like to take to the bottle sometimes. The second one says, well, to be truthful, I have a problem with lust. I desire every woman I see. That's horrendous. One of the others asked the third one, well, what is something that you have a problem with? The third preacher replies, gossip, and I can't wait to get back to shore. Lisa DeLay, a non-denominational pastor, had this to say about gossip. A spirit of gossip is at its core murderous. This may sound harsh, but I believe it to be the truth. Gossips may use the excuse that they are only being honest as they covertly report to listeners. But points for honesty are negated the second we put someone in a reproachful light. It's as equitable as saying, yes, I blew her brains out, officer, but it's okay because I also fixed her hair pretty well. The hairdo issue doesn't improve the reality that something despicable happened. Anytime we engage in bad talk or personal depreciation on any level, we harm. I think she put that well. For us, we've got to stop any bad talk if we get involved in that. And we're not prone to. None of us want to. But it can happen. We don't want to get involved in gossip. Gossip is truly evil and harmful. Harmful to all parties that engage in it. If we see or get involved, as can happen, in some gossip, be willing to walk away. We can walk away. You just walk away. Don't get involved in it. Don't be a party to it. It's obvious that that would be the thing to do, but it's hard to do. It's hard to do. And maybe you have a problem judging what's gossip and what isn't. I would say if it has an inkling of the nature of gossip, excuse yourself. Walk away. Hard to do. The saying goes, those who gossip to you will gossip about you. That you can be sure of. Those who gossip to you will gossip about you. How many times does that happen to you? I hope none of this happens to any of you. But the reality is, if James saw the issues with the church, with the tongue, with the mind of people exercising their tongue, using words to harm and to hurt, he wouldn't have had to write an entire chapter about that. We need to avoid a us and them mentality. Us and them. We're right, they're wrong or mostly wrong. This can happen. Of course, it happens in politics. You know, if you're a Republican, not in the church, obviously, but hey, the Republicans can do no wrong. If you're a Democrat, those Republicans, they're going to ruin the country. So they're both going to ruin the country. That is granted. So Avoid a us versus them mentality. We can't get into groupthink. Like, our church is better than your church. Let God sort out the churches. That's not our job. But sometimes we can have a warlike spirit against another group. And it could even be another church group that may vary slightly from your total body of beliefs. Once again, the power of our words can cause great hurt in dealing with people that their faith may be slightly different than yours. Our words matter. Our words do matter. The power of our words can cause great hurt or cause great good. Words can build up or they can tear down. They can heal or they can hurt. How do we make sure our words have a positive impact on others? How do we? Turn to Proverbs 12, verse 18. We guard our words. That is the main way. We guard our words. We monitor our words. We evaluate our words. And we censure our words if they're headed in a wrong way. Proverbs 12 and verse 18 from the NIV. Reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Reckless words like a sword, right through you. But the tongue of the wise brings healing. So let's try to be wise. Try to be wise. Pleasant words are a honeycomb. This is Proverbs 16, verse 24. Proverbs 16, verse 24. Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. So we need to share pleasant words. We need to be pleasant with people. We need to be kind to people, even people who don't deserve it, God says. Be kind to people. Be pleasant with people who you may not agree with. This happens in business quite a bit. And if you're smart, you'll be kind to people because they will run from you if you have a confrontation in the business world. Verse 23 of Proverbs 16 says, "The heart of the wise teaches his mouth and adds learning to his lips." This is something that we can learn. This is something that we can practice. We need to be positive and speak positively in every situation that we can. We must examine our words. We ask God for a clean heart and a clean mind that will guide our words and a renewed spirit. David expressed what we must do and shows us that our words matter in Psalm 51. Psalm 51 and verse 10. He says, "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. O Lord, open my lips, and my mouth will declare your praise." That's how we clean up our heart. Healing words come from a healthy heart. The fruit of a healthy heart is a tree with good fruit. We know the fruits of the Spirit should guide how we react to things and how we talk and how we converse with one another. Hurtful words can come out of a hurting heart. A sick tree is not going to grow good fruit. It'll have sick fruit. Hurtful words hurt people. Angry people oftentimes speak angry words. So we have to work on our anger. If we have an anger problem and we tend to lash out, we need to press that stop button. Go back 7 seconds and try again. We need to speak kindly to one another. In Ephesians 4, verse 31. Ephesians 4 and verse 31. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling, and slander, along with every form of evil malice. It's Ephesians 4, verse 31. So, get rid of bitterness and don't approach people in an attitude of bitterness or rage or anger, and certainly not slandering people. Let's turn over to Matthew 12. Matthew 12. And we'll begin in verse 33. Matthew 12. In verse 33. This is Jesus speaking to us all. Verse 33. Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For a tree is known by its fruit. Brood of vipers. Of course, he's talking to the Pharisees here. Brood of vipers. How can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. We'll be showing our heart, our commitment to God and the principles of Jesus Christ's life, through our mouth, through our tongue. Verse 35. A good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth good things, and an evil man, out of the evil treasure, brings forth evil things. But I say to you, that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. It's a little bit frightful. A little bit frightful. This is how important God says words are, and Jesus Christ tells us words are. That should always give us pause before we speak, or we speak out of turn. In conclusion, let's turn to Ephesians 4. Ephesians 4 and verse 29. Ephesians 4 and verse 29. Verse 29 from the NIV. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up, according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Those are words to live by. Our words matter. We must use the power of our words to speak wisely, speak kindly, and to speak positively.